Hello, I'm Mark Steiner.
And I'm Anthony McCarthy.
Anthony and I today are joined by in studio by Marta Mossberg. Marta is a senior fellow at the Maryland Public Policy Institute, a fellow at the Franklin Center for Government and Public Integrity, and a columnist for the Baltimore Sun and Frederick News Post. Imara Jones joins us by phone. Imara is economic justice contributor to Colorlines.com and served in the Clinton White House, where he worked on international trade policy. And Marta and Imara, welcome. Good to have you both with us.
Good to be
Thank
here.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
And folks, did you see the president and the Republican candidate on 60 Minutes last night?
Saw some of it.
Did you see him on Univision? Then call us here, 410-319-8888. Well, even if you didn't see them, you can call it 410-319-8888. Your thoughts on what you saw. I found, Anthony, I'll let you, I found it interesting that the way they began it was why they were there. When Jorge Ramos and Maria Elena Salinas were at the top of the show saying, we're doing this tonight because there are no people of color in any of the presidential debates, so we're doing this, which I thought was a and they came in pretty hard.
Oh, boy. I was very impressed, Mark, with both commentators or both of the moderators. I appreciated that they drilled the president. They forced him to answer questions. They forced him to talk about broken promises. And I only hope that the actual debates that we see between Mitt Romney and the president are as forceful and that they do force Mitt Romney and the president to answer some hard questions. And not just give us the talking points, but to move past the talking points. Barack Obama has a lot to answer for, and he has a lot to give to the folks about what he's planning to do in the second term. Mitt Romney needs to give us some specifics on what the alternative is. He talks in very broad terms on almost every issue. It's time to drill down to specifics because I think the race is actually that close.
It could be that close.
I was just thinking back to the Republican primaries when they, I think it was NBC, trotted out someone from a Hispanic channel that's affiliated with NBC to ask one question related to Latino voters, and I thought that was so hysterical. It's kind of like, can't they be integrated into something bigger about the whole campaign? Isn't immigration a huge issue that doesn't need someone from a Latino background to ask about? You know, with the Univision interview, I feel like they gave President Obama a pass on the immigration issue, and they really didn't press him hard on that because he had an opportunity to get that done in his first 2 years in office, and he didn't do anything about that. George W. Bush actually has done a lot more in immigration than President Obama ever has.
Mara, let me look.
Jorge Ramos did press him on immigration, and I think, as you said, it's much more about the journalistic integrity that they had on Univision to press him hard on a couple of issues. I mean, he basically pushed him on immigration. The president gave a response, and then he said, "Yeah." And Jorge responded, "Yes, but a promise is a promise. And so, what are you going to do?" And so, I think that you're right, and I think that it just shows the degree to which the Latino community is really, really engaged in this election, and that's really gratifying. And you know, more broadly, I mean, I think going to the point that was made earlier, Romney does have specific plans. I mean, this idea that he doesn't have specific plans, he has them, but he won't trot them out because they won't be popular. I mean, he basically wants to have almost $10 trillion in cuts over 8 years, with $5 trillion tax cut to millionaires, $2 trillion more than the Pentagon is asking for, and then gutting a lot of the programs for the 47% in order to pay for it. That's just not a popular line to run on. He knows that, and he won't press it. But he does have specific plans. There are numbers attached to them, and they are really disturbing.
You know, go ahead, Marta. I'm sorry.
Well, no, I mean, I was just thinking about how another thing that came out from that interview was talking about, you know, was Obama saying, you can't change Washington from the inside. You have to do it from the outside. And I thought that was just a way to punt responsibility from his own policies because, you look at where the economy is right now. He doesn't want to take full responsibility for it. So to me, that was my biggest takeaway from that interview.
But just on that point, I mean, I think that he's right. I mean, what he did for the first couple of years was he tried to play the inside game. The inside game doesn't benefit him because he doesn't necessarily have the strongest skill set for it. And when he's gone to the outside on a lot of these issues, he has made progress and traction. When he realized he wasn't going to be able to make progress on the DREAM Act, he decided to do it by executive order. He did pushed really hard by using the outside game on Don't Ask, Don't Tell, which worked. And this last summer, he took the issue of student loans and the student write-off to the country and ended up moving the Senate on it, even though they complained, kicking and screaming. And so I think it actually shows maturity on his part to realize that the power of the presidency in large part is the power of the microphone. That microphone is pointed outwards to the country, and to the degree that he can use it and engage people on it, he can start to win and get more traction. And I think that he's right on that.
I think we've also seen the video clip, and I'm sorry to even reference all these video clips that have been flying out over the last 2 weeks, but a video clip of candidate Romney when he was running for the United States Senate in Massachusetts saying the exact same thing. He said, you can't change Washington from the inside. You have to change Washington from the outside. And I think it's a very valid point, but I will tell you there were moments, and it's rare that I would say this about Mitt Romney, but there were moments where I thought there were these moments of brilliance when I listened to him, where he appeared in both interviews, very presidential to me.
Is this when he's running against Kennedy and this is debates with him and Kennedy?
Mm-hmm. And I thought it was fascinating to hear him speak in very, you know what, Mark, I have very different views of the Middle East policy and our foreign policy than Mitt Romney. But when he explains it, when he is actually allowed to unfiltered explain his vision for the Middle East, his vision for Israel and Iraq, he makes sense. He makes sense on those policies. Now, does Barack Obama and the administration's longstanding policy make more sense? It sure does. And I think oftentimes, although I think he made his case well on 60 Minutes and the Univision, I think that Mitt Romney has to move beyond those talking points. There is a presentation that Barack Obama makes when he is making the case for whatever the policy is. He really has learned the art of wordsmithing, and he chooses his words very carefully, whereas it seems like Mitt Romney is really speaking, oftentimes to me, speaking from what he believes and what he knows, oftentimes coming up short. But I found him to have these real moments of presidential impression in both of those interviews.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's one of the, I mean, one of the issues with that, though, with Mitt Romney is that you never know which Mitt Romney is going to show up. I mean, it's the old adage that he's been on both sides of every issue twice. And so he can speak lucidly from a lot of different perspectives, and he's done that over and over for the 7 years that he's been running president, and that's his problem. It's not that he can't engage and sound lucid on one topic, but he's been on every side of that topic several times and presents that. And so the problem is in giving a sense of the American people of consistency, of constancy, of a point of view. And I think that that's where he gets in trouble. And it's really hard given the base that the base of his party and the views that they have, they're already suspicious of him, are totally diametrically opposed to what he needs to do in order to attract middle-of-the-road voters. And there is that clash all the time in terms of which Mitt Romney is going to show up.
Well, you know, with Obama, though, it's interesting. You know, he's been on – he goes on Letterman. He goes on The View. He always says he has a communication problem. Well, he communicates all the time. And yet he seems to blame Americans for not understanding what he's trying to do. And I have a real issue with that. I mean, you can blame Mitt Romney for going back and forth on certain issues. But I think that the president has and his aides have explained very clearly what they want to do, and the American people are not very excited about a lot of the programs he's instituted, and the economy certainly hasn't changed to the extent that he would have wanted to when he campaigned on hope and change. So I think it's hard to kind of distance him from, you know, that campaign in 2008 from where he is right now, saying you can't change Washington from the inside. You have to be on the outside. I think he ran saying, I'm going to fix everything from the inside, and it hasn't worked.
I'm sorry.
I just want to get folks to join us here, 410-319-8888. I'm really curious what your thoughts are on what you hear. Our guests here, Anthony McCarthy and I here on the show today together. It's Monday. This is Mark Steiner. I want to hear what you think about this presidential campaign, the stance, the answers that President Barack Obama gave and that Governor Mitt Romney gave. If you saw Univision, if you saw what happened on 60 Minutes, where this campaign is going, we really want to hear what did it move you? Did it change you? 410-319-8888. I mean, I think that, Imara, what were you going to say? I have something to ask you both, but what were you about to say?
The point I was going to make is that Republicans also bear responsibility for the inside game and for the gridlock and for the the condition of the country. I mean, there has, I mean, Senator McConnell said that the number one priority was to defeat the president, which means in order to do that, you have to gum up the entire political process. And they've done that on, even on things that they support. I mean, just last week on the veteran jobs bill, which had four Republican co-sponsors and who were allowed to largely write the bill, when it came time to vote on it in the entire Senate, they decided to defect because they don't want to give the president a win during a political year. And it's been like that since 2009, when he first set in office. And so the president, you know, definitely bears responsibility for several of the choices that he made as a part of his leader as the executive branch, but they're also the legislative branch bears a lot of responsibility as well, and the Republicans have made a political calculation to throw sand in the gears, to stop the machine from running, and then to blame it all on the president, and that's just not accurate.
Let me open the phones here, 410-319-8888. Get your thoughts on the air here, and to Keisha in Baltimore, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hi, Keisha, welcome.
Thank you, and I'm sorry, this female speaker, she just mentioned about President Obama.
Martha, uh-huh.
Martha, I'm sorry. Sorry about that, Martha.
That's all right.
Okay.
Having a communications issue. But I actually think he does have a communication issue, and I think the prime example would be the health care policy that when he was putting it out, it just was not coming across. I think the Republicans or the opposition really did a great job of making their opposition known, more so than what the whole plan entailed. And people really harp on those factors that weren't true. And those things kept being revived and brought up over and over again. It's like no matter what he says sometimes, it seems like people just still believe what they want to believe. And whatever is opposite of what his administration is putting out. And there were a number of times when different, you know, policies or ideas were being spoken about. I could understand it, but in talking in general to other people, it's like they just weren't getting it. And I wondered, like, who is working on his staff that's assisting him with this communications issue?
Well, I mean, I don't think it's so much a communication issue. I mean, if you want to mention Obamacare, when you talk about that independent payment advisory board, those sort of unelected bureaucrats are going to decide on your health care. That's very much a part of the bill. So, and I think that's something that people didn't like. That wasn't a communication problem. I mean, then you had Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi saying, well, we need to pass it so we can find out what's in it. That's, to me, speaks volumes about what the president wanted people to know about the bill.
I think Marta actually has a point on this, and we would agree. I mean, I think one of the reasons why the communication around the bill was so convoluted is because the bill was convoluted. And why was the bill convoluted? It was actually convoluted in an attempt to get Republican votes, because the basic idea of exchange and a personal mandate are actually Republican ideas. They come out of the Heritage Foundation, and the president wanted to include those in an attempt to get Republican votes, when the simplest plan and the simplest explanation would have been to move towards a single payer system, which would have been transparent, everyone would have understood it, and then we could have had a clearer conversation. So one of the reasons why it was convoluted is that the bill was a bit convoluted, and that was an attempt to try to get Republican votes by including Republican ideas that are more complex. And so, I mean, do you fault him for trying to reach out, or do you fault him for not being more hardline? It seems like whichever way he turns, he's going to get hit.
Well, this might have been part of Barack Obama playing the insider in this game in Washington. I mean, the bill that came out, look, the vast majority of Americans, I think, would not want to see what we're calling Obamacare repealed. I think that's clear. Mm-hmm. Or I say a majority, not vast, a majority.
No, I think it's very close, actually.
What the bill we have is basically, that is, not that I'm going to get sidetracked in the health bill here, but it's basically, I mean, it's not that far different than Romney's bill in Massachusetts, because mm-hmm. we covered this thing pretty intensely. A lot of it is the Republican bill that people wanted back in the 80s and 90s in the Republican Party, and now all of a sudden it becomes Obama's bill and Republicans don't like it. But it's always been the industry's bill. This is the bill the insurance companies wanted. This is the bill, the reason people are disillusioned a little bit with Barack Obama, which is one of the things I like. We'll get back to Univision in a minute, how Univision pushed Barack Obama, was that he kept talking over and over again during the campaign, we will have a public option. Didn't fight for it. And I think that got a lot of people upset more than, and so the bill became this convoluted mass of paper that everybody is just going, okay, yawn, at least I have my health care.
Well, you know, I can't remember who said this, but it was a some Democratic senator, and they said basically that this bill is a starter house. So basically it lays the pathway for a single-payer option, and I think that's going to happen down the road.
But I think one of the things that a lot of people found very frustrating with President Obama, especially when it came to the health care reform bill, was that the public option was done away with immediately as the debate was beginning. And I think a lot of progressives still have that in their mind, that this president has this idea that if he just keeps reaching out, that the Republicans are going to reach back. And time again, what we find is they will be a part of the negotiation for major legislation that, you know, it's a non-starter if it doesn't include A, B, and C. The president will relent. The White House will relent. Democrats, who I just find the leadership, and I've mentioned this before, the leadership of the House is very frustrating to me, the Democratic leadership. They'll push back on the president, and they'll push back, and yet they won't fight for some of his key provisions, but the president will relent, and then no Republican will vote for the legislation. And it's almost a slap in the face. And I think progressives are asking, why do you keep doing this?
Well, you know, I think it's not in President Obama. I think he's very cool and cold. I mean, this was sort of apparent at Ted Kennedy's funeral. You know, you saw Bill Clinton slapping and hugging and kissing everyone, and Obama just sort of stayed back. I mean, and you know, you look at the new book out by Bob Woodward, The Price of Politics, talking about his leadership style. The guy doesn't really like people that much. You know, I mean, it's pretty apparent, and you can't pass things unless you really go out and campaign for them. And I don't know, I mean, it's not that he doesn't want them, it's just that he expects them to happen, I think, without him having to do all of that kind of work.
Well, let me just take this back. In all honesty, Marta, I think those kind of critiques, I think they kind of personalize the politics rather than looking at the broader issues. It's just like, you know, complaining about Romney's tan or putting his dog on the car. I mean, those things are almost meaningless to me.
Well, not if it's important to whether or not legislation gets passed. I think someone's personal style is very important to getting something done. And if someone is not willing to go a certain place and therefore people tune them out, like including that one story in Woodward's book talking about how Speaker of the House Pelosi just muted him out so they could actually talk because he was just droning on and on about stuff. I mean, it's just, you know, those are certain things that are very hurtful to getting legislation passed.
I mean, if we want to talk about personality, it's quite clear that, you know, Governor Romney has difficulty connecting as well.
Oh, definitely.
There are a lot of issues that he has in terms of inspiring faith and confidence. I mean, you know, I said this weekend, but every election is not only a choice between politics and policy, it's a choice between people. And people and the public voters have to make up their mind about which of these two, in this case men, hopefully it won't always be that way, but these two men, they want to be president, who they believe has the best skill set. And actually, I think the Univision interviews were probably, as you said at the top of the show, Mark, some of the most illuminating of them as people.
Look, I think what happened, I'm going to go back to the phones here because a lot of people are calling in. I'm going to go right to Eric in Washington, next caller up. But I think that's one of the things that really hit me about Univision was they didn't let up. And you can't let up. In these conversations we're having on Beyond the Spin from people from community stations around the country, a lot of them are Latino stations, African-American stations, Native stations, small urban stations. These are the conversations no one else is having this campaign. Most of the stuff in this campaign right now is gobbledygook. You know, mm-hmm. It really is over nothing. And they pressed him on his promises on immigration, which he did not live up to. And they needed to press him on that. And they pressed him on. But one thing I didn't press him on, which I would have done if I had a chance to ask, which is that I'm glad you did what you did for the DREAM Act, and I think that's important. Mm-hmm. But then in the next step, Secretary of Health and Human Services says the same kids who we're going to let stay in America and not deport so they can go to college and make America better, you can't have health insurance.
You can't have health coverage.
Can't have Medicare. Can't get Medicaid. Can't get any insurance, not Medicare, but Medicaid. Can't use any of the health insurance that we have in this bill. That's the kind of stuff that I think the administration has to be pushed on and has to answer to. Eric in Washington, you're on the air.
Yes, good afternoon. I've been listening to your panelists and your callers alike, and I just have to disagree with the lady that said that Obama just seems like he doesn't even like people. Nothing could be further from the truth. And I think we all need to remember, considering the state that America was in when President Obama was elected, and the concrete things that he has accomplished in his few years that he's been in office, starting with saving the one of the pillars of American society in the auto industry, as well as passing the health care bill with or without help that 10 presidents before him couldn't even get as far as he's gotten, along with how he's changed America's stance worldwide, where America's been hated by a lot of countries for a long time, and I think he's improved that dramatically. I don't see how anyone could possibly think that Mitt Romney would be a better answer. Yes, President Obama has had some mistakes as well, but overall, there's no comparing him to what a Mitt Romney would look like, let alone the fact that he's gotten no help the entire time, no help, and he's been hated by so many just because he's who he is. That's all I have to say.
Eric,
have a good
from
day.
D.C., thank you so much. Marta, let me let you have a take before we take a break.
Well, first of all, I would say on not having any help issue, he had Congress with him for the first 2 years that he was in office. So I would call that a lot of help. As far as America being loved by others around the world, I would just point to the events in the past couple of weeks to say that we have not improved our relations with the Middle East since President Obama has taken office. And
nor is it any worse than he's had since he's taken office. So let's, I mean, those are the kind of party lines that make me crazy.
No,
the Democrats and Republicans use them. It's like, it's not any worse either. I mean, it's the same way it always has been.
No, but I think that if you're trying to create clear lines about, where is the Obama administration going to go on Middle East policy and how, his whole speech on how we're going to be friends with Muslims and how America hasn't treated Muslims well, they still hate us. Nothing has really changed.
Marta, let me just challenge you one thing. It'd be fun, interesting for us to do this in a greater depth one day. But I mean, they say things like Muslims hate us. I mean, Muslims don't hate us. I mean, we're a billion Muslims in the world. Most of them are not Arabs. Most of them are in Indonesia. Most of them are in South Asia. They're not even in the Arab world. They're Africans in sub-Saharan Africa. I mean, and it's if you looked at Benghazi, when that small group attacked the consulate and the ambassador were killed and the other two people were killed, that tragedy happened. Just the other day, thousands of Benghazians, Libyans, marched against their camp, who said, "We don't want you doing this to us. This is the group that helped us overthrow Gaddafi." I mean, that's not hating America.
But the one thing I would add real quick before we go to the break, and Marta's gotten pretty far without me defending her position, but I have found it fascinating, Mark, that I think oftentimes, and you not among what I'm about to say, I think that too often I know that most of the folks that I deal with, that I speak before, that I visit and lecture, are enamored with Barack Obama. And even the smallest of criticism of him as a president often elicits a great deal of unfriendly response. But even there was a gentleman who had unprecedented access to the president for the last year and a half. He's written a book. He talks about being with Obama, traveling with Obama, playing basketball, getting his nose hit.
Is this a Michael Lewis?
Michael
book?
Lewis. Yeah. Michael Lewis said the one thing that he was asked on Scarborough, give me something negative that you see. He said, well, it's hard to say. He said, but this president is purposefully disengaged, that he does not engage with his staff, that he purposefully keeps a distance between himself and the people around him other than his family. And some of the staff members have interpreted that as being very cold and distant. And so I think it is part of his governing style. I think it's part of his leadership style. But I think we all I love him. I'm an Obama supporter. I make no bones about it, even in my criticism of him. I think that we would like to see him as perfect. He's far from it.
We have to take a very brief break. Come right back. And there's so much more to talk about. We're going to hear what Russ has to say about what he saw in 60 Minutes. We're going to hear what Antonio has to say about Woodward's book. We're going to get to those calls coming in. On the way there, let me remind you that Facing Race is a conference organized by our friends at colorlines.com. is the largest national multiracial gathering of leaders, educators, journalists, artists, and activists on racial justice. This year's keynote speaker is the author Juno Diaz. It's happening right here in Baltimore from November 15th to the 17th. And for more information and to get involved, please visit arc.org or arc.org/facingrace. We'll be right back with our guest and the phone calls. Don't go away. Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. And that's Anthony McCarthy.
And I'm Anthony McCarthy. I'm sorry. I was reading a few texts.
That's okay. You can read texts and let us know what they're saying. That reminds you, the League of Women Voters of Baltimore encourages informed and active participation in government and works to increase understanding of major public policy issues. The League of Women Voters is holding a public forum that I'm moderating on the DREAM Act and the Marriage Equality Act, Maryland ballot questions 4 and 6, on Tuesday, October 9th, here at the Morgan State University Student Union from 7 to 9 p.m. The forum is free and open to the public. We encourage you to join us and have your voice heard. And we'll be taping it for airing later on the Mark Steiner Show. Number here is 410-319-8888. Anthony McCarthy and I are joined by Amara Jones, who is an economic justice contributor to ColorLines.com, served in the Clinton White House where he worked on international trade policy. Marta Mossberg is a senior fellow at the Maryland Public Policy Institute, a fellow at the Franklin Center for Government and Public Integrity, and a columnist for the Baltimore Sun and the Franklin News Post. 410-319-8888 is the number here. Can we go right to the phones, get our listeners' thoughts? And Russ, you're on the air.
Greetings, Mark.
How are you, Russ? Yes. Welcome.
I'm good. Mark, you know, I'm an Obama apologist, and I make no bones about it. And what we've done to this president from the economy standpoint, and I'm just saying this because of what I heard Martha said earlier, is we said, Mr. President, we want you to go out and change the economy. We want you to hit the ball and run to first base. So because nobody's studying to hit the ball, they said they didn't tell him the rest of the rules. So he hits the ball. He's ready to go to first base. They said, oh, wait a minute, Mr. President, one more thing. Before you run to first base, we're going to put this refrigerator on your back. That's the kind of help he's gotten from the Congress of the United States. But I called because during her genius of a speech during the National Convention, Michelle Obama said something that characterized Mitt Romney in a way that I think has come to fruition already. She said, only the hard decisions make their way to the desk of the president. All the hard stuff comes to his desk. But there comes a time when the data and when the numbers, the statistics, don't bring you to the right answer. And then it comes down to values. Here comes Mr. Romney with his 47% fiasco. Well, find out, I bet he didn't realize that some of those 47% are millionaires who doctor their taxes to the point that they pay no taxes. So here he is. The data was absolutely correct. No question about the data. But values come to play because he didn't investigate to see who those 47% were. He didn't put a face on those people. That's a matter of values. You see what I'm saying? And that's what I want folks to understand about Mr. Romney.
Okay.
He didn't get paid a nickel to create any jobs at Bain Capital. He got paid to enhance shareholder value. And if that meant creating a job, fine. If that meant firing somebody, fine. Thank you, Mark.
Thank you so much. Marta, I'll let you go and then go into Amari.
Well, I was just thinking.
Amara, excuse me.
I was just thinking about how Martin O'Malley constantly opens most, most times he's up on national television with, you know, the Bush economy, the Bush economy this, Bush economy that. Well, there comes a time after, I think, 3.5-4 years at this point in the Obama presidency when you have to start taking responsibility for your term in office. And I think that's where we're at right now. And I think the president doesn't fully want to take responsibility for it because he thought he would have it turned around by now. So, I think the Democrats are still blaming other people for where we're at this point. And they shouldn't be. It's their responsibility. They're in power. They had power the first 2 years that Obama was in office in Congress. And it's time to take personal responsibility on that issue.
Amara?
Here we go with personal responsibility, Cobb. You know, a quote directly from Mr. Romney's 47% tape. I mean, I think two things. One is that he wasn't right on the facts. I mean, that's one of the things that was disturbing. He had created a story and then bent the facts to fit a story that he wanted to believe in that legitimated a lot of his beliefs. He said that the 47% didn't care about that they didn't care about themselves and that they didn't take responsibility. Well, the majority of the people that don't pay federal income tax who are not seniors work. They just don't make enough to live, which is why they don't pay federal income tax. And the fact that he didn't understand that he doesn't understand that he would be president of a country in which 100 million people are either poor and or working poor, and most of whom work, is what is really astounding. That means he doesn't even understand the enterprise that he would be, you know, to use his terms, CEO of. So this is a time when his values and the facts and his worldview all come together to be revelatory of him as a person, and none of it added up, which is why we're still talking about it and why it was so disturbing. And yes, president had the first 2 years all to himself, you know, as it were, but even that is not completely accurate, because for a part of that, he didn't have 60 votes in the Senate and that he needed to, and that was a potential roadblock on some issues and was a roadblock on a lot of issues. For instance, the stimulus was a lot smaller than it should have been because they needed to get the votes in order to pass it. And it needed to be probably a third larger than it was to have more of an impact, even though it did save 3 million jobs. It needed to do a lot more, and it needed to be bigger, but the votes weren't there, and he needed some Republican votes on that. And this goes to a larger point, and that is that to say that the president should have fixed in 2 years the largest and most severe recession that we've had in almost 100 years is just a bit ridiculous and out of whack. I mean, President Roosevelt, it took him the first eight years to just blunt the impact of the Great Recession and not to turn it around. We didn't get that until war came along and there was a stimulation of demand right the way across the board and global demand for U.S. arms and all of the rest of it. So to say he had 2 years and he didn't fix a hole that almost was as big as we've had in 100 just seems to be odd and disingenuous. And moreover, as I said before, Republicans bear responsibility for that, because the moment they came to power, they said, we're sitting on our hands, we're not doing anything, and we're going to hold you responsible, and in 2012 run against you on it. So there are just a lot of ways in which, you know, responsibility is shared.
Should we go back to the phone, Martin?
A couple points. I mean, if you look, what Romney said was crass and it was wrong, and he has to be president of the entire United States, not just a segment of it. But if you look at what's going on in this country, dependency is growing across the board, and that's just hard to deny. You know, there's over 46 million people on food stamps right now. That's 15% of the population. That's up from just over 11% a few years ago. You look at the number of people on Social Security disability insurance. That's gone up, I think, over 22%. Since Obama took office. There's just so many factors. And, you know, that statistic about Social Security disability is a large reason why the number of people who are participating in the workforce has dropped out. So, I mean, that we're creating a culture of less work, more dependency. And I can't think, I mean, that's not a good thing. The statistics that Mitt Romney used were wrong. But what he's, you know, the truth about dependency in the United States and self-reliance, I think is he was moving in the right direction on those areas.
I'm sorry, but I think that Marta just mischaracterized where we are. It seems that people are, I don't understand how many people are blind to the fact that we are still stuck in the worst economic recession in 80 years. We haven't left it yet. So, of course, you're going to have more people that are relying on on essential government programs that provide things like food. And of course we are going to still have those things go up. We haven't left the recession. And in black and brown communities, not only is it the worst recession, it's an out-and-out depression. Those double-digit numbers of employment are depression-era numbers, straight up. No other way to look at it. And so to say that, oh, we have a culture of dependency that's grown under Obama, no, we have the legacy of the worst recession in 80 years that were caused directly and happened on his previous watch. When he walked into the door on January 1st, the country was bleeding 750,000 jobs a month. The hole was three times larger than they thought four weeks prior to that, and all of that happened before he even came into office. To hold him completely responsible for, quote, the culture of dependency, and it's not a culture of dependency if most of those people work, is just wrong.
So let me get the phone so we can write back. 410-319-8888. A lot of people are calling in. We'll try to get a couple calls in order to get them on the air because they've been waiting a long time. Antonio and Timonium, you're on the air.
Hi.
Go ahead. I think you punched your buttons, but go ahead, Antonio. Antonio, you're hitting your buttons. I'm sorry you waited so long. Didn't get you. We just lost Antonio. 410-319-8888. Up next is LaVon. You're on the air.
LaVon.
Yes. I agree with the gentleman who's speaking. The problem I have with the GOP leadership is that it seems like, they're intentionally misrepresenting the facts, which is just an outright lie. I mean, it's just amazing that, unfortunately, people are not checking the facts. I mean, if you have a recession, and the Great Depression, it doesn't take, you can't flip it in 1 year. I mean, the recovery is not a restoration. It's a recover. That means we're still in the mold of, and as a result of the loss of 8 million jobs, they hadn't come back. Those jobs have not come back. So, I don't understand how they expect people to kind of be restored and not have that dependency that was primarily created by the corporate industry. They created this kind of collapse of several economies, but then they expect the poor people to suffer from it, or the people that lost their jobs to suffer for that, but they're continuing to get rich. It's just a total mismatch, and that's not being stated enough. When you talk about the 47%, and he said that all of them voted for Obama, well, that's another lie, because 10 of the most poverty-stricken states in this United States are the states that support generally the Republican Party. Mississippi, Alabama, Georgia, all of those are suffering something like 25% in poverty. I might be wrong with my numbers, but they're drastic poverty stricken. And so, the lies that continue to come forth from this leadership is just amazing to me. And it's not being challenged even in the media to a large degree. They might do some fact checkers once in a while, but they let them kind of stick with these lies that they continue to carry. But this president has, everybody recognizes the pure racism. When I listened to the Simpson Bowles, the two guys with that whole deficit crisis thing, normal deficit ceiling issues that were went on with every president, Reagan, Bush, they did it 14, 17 times, all of a sudden it's going to be done different with this president. Everything that's a normalcy with how you run a government, they changed the script. And then they blame the president because of him, he can't get anything done because of the script change. It's amazing. A lot of people are sick of it, but it's unfortunate that a lot of the ignorance that is going around, they don't challenge that, or it's just because of the hatred that they have against this president.
All right, LaVon, I appreciate your phone call. And Marta, and please go ahead.
I don't think that Simpson Bowles, I don't understand why that was a racist. What they were doing was racist. I think what they were trying to do was to come up with a compromise, and the president had stated before that he wanted that, and then he rejected it. If I had been called to sit on that commission and then was just kind of thrown away like that commission's report was, I would be very angry. I think that had nothing to do with race, and that had to do with what's sustainable for the future of the United States. We've already been downgraded, and we could be again. We're not in good financial shape. So it's not a question of, these are great programs. They do good things for people, and they help people out. After a while, you have to look at math, and it's not on our side in the United States, just like it hasn't been on the side of Greece or of Spain or of Italy. And, all these, the way that we want to live is not necessarily the way that we can afford to pay for. So I think those are big issues that need to be dealt with without putting race into the conversation.
Amara, you have a comment? Should we go back to the phones?
Really quickly, because I want to
I want to hear more of the calls as well. Look, the bottom line is that the issue isn't about the math. It's about who pays and how we decide that. And we want to make sure that whatever changes that we have in order to secure the long-term financial security of this country are fair, and that the traditional people that are being asked to pay for them, as in the past, don't disproportionately bear the burden, that everybody, particularly the 1% and the people that have benefited from the changes in the tax structure over the 30 years, pay just as much and contribute as well.
410-319-8888. Anthony, so you're going to jump in here. Let's go to the person holding on next. The longest is Robin. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi, Mark.
Hi, Robin.
I love your show. Love
Thank
it.
You.
Yeah. Now, I want to tell this lady, y'all. I think she was on your show last week. She sounds like it's the same lady.
Marty was with her.
I was.
Her and her party, the GOP, been ranting and raving about President Obama.
Let me just state that I do not work for any Republican organization. I never have, and I'm not a part of them.
Don't cut me off, please.
No, Robin, she was just trying to explain to you that she's not a Republican. I mean, she's
right.
Not work for the Republicans. But go ahead, Robin.
But the Republican Party and people who are anti-Obama, they've been ranting and raving about the fact that Obama hasn't done anything. He needs to take personal responsibility for having not done anything the first 4 years. All I want to say to her, ask her, what makes her think that if Mitt Romney gets elected, that it's going to take him 4 years to clean it up, too? That's all I had to say. It's going to take much longer for him, too. And then they'll see from their own perspective that it's not Obama's fault. It's going to take many years to clean this up.
I think we're way down that road. I think that would be very hard for Romney to come in and change things all that quickly. My problem with Obama is that I think he's done a lot of things, and I think he's put us on the wrong path. I think that some of the ideas out of the Romney campaign and some of the ideas specifically out of Paul Ryan would put us back on the path to fiscal responsibility. But I think we're so far gone that President Obama, Romney, whoever is president, is going to have a huge, huge problem going forward.
I place a great deal of faith in the American people, and I find it fascinating. I was reading Peggy Noonan this weekend, and I heard her. She was very clear on what she thought that the Romney campaign needed to begin to articulate. But her frustration is she doesn't believe that Mitt Romney is capable of doing that. And he was on Meet the Press this weekend with Scarborough and Buchanan. They are hardline, staunch Republicans, and they have spent the last 2 weeks yelling at the Republican Party and yelling at Mitt Romney to get on message, stay on message, focus. Because I think the general frustration for a lot of Republicans is they didn't want Mitt Romney. They did not want this moderate to liberal Republican to be the standard bearer who ran in the primary as a conservative. But we knew that that a lot of folks, whether it was Gingrich or Santorum, were holding their nose when they had to endorse this guy. And I think the American people have picked up on that. And as much, Marta, as I agree with you that there are things that the American people should be frustrated about, I think what we see in these polls and why Obama is starting to pull ahead, not all over the country, but in key swing states, is because they do not believe Mitt Romney is capable of fixing these problems. And they trust that Barack Obama will move us in a second term closer to where we need to be. And I think that's hugely problematic. And I don't think that Mitt Romney is going to perform in those debates the way everybody keeps saying he is. I don't think he's going to be even more articulate on what his positions are. And I think it's going to be problematic. And it's going to end up costing the Republicans not even a chance to control the Senate. But I think they may forfeit the House as well.
So I wonder, though, before we go back to the phones here, there's a couple of quick issues here. I mean, Imara, when we keep talking about President Barack Obama in his first term and what he's done, and people who love Barack Obama and really back him take real umbrage at anybody who criticizes the president. But one of the things he is criticized for, and why he is, that there are now 10% more people not voting than there were before, up to 90 million this year, is because people were very frustrated by what they think was not enough, forceful enough, of being too compromising when he didn't have to be compromised. Now, you said earlier he couldn't have done anything else, but I mean, isn't there some, I think there's some credence to that. I mean, there was a, you know, when Barack Obama came in, people thought he was going to, yes, have the Wall Street people sitting in as economists in his in the White House and helping make policy, but all the ones who, quote-unquote, progressives wanted to have on aren't even close to the White House in the conversations. And that those things were appeared over and over again, that was, there's a real sense of disillusionment even among many who supported him in 2008. What was that joke that someone told Amaro that, you know, that I think Bill Maher might have said it. He said, the only person who can beat Barack Obama in 2012 is Barack Obama in 2008.
No, that's a great you know, I've noticed that there are a ton more Barack Obama bumper stickers from the last election. I've only seen a handful of new stickers. I don't know if you guys have noticed that or not, but it just seemed very interesting to me.
I mean, I think to answer your question, look, I have written a lot of stuff that wasn't always flattering of the president, and definitely the publication Color Lines has held him accountable in a lot of different ways, as have a lot of the non-mainstream press. But what I think is important is that the criticism of him be accurate and that it not be a caricature. And the fact is that to blame him wholly for this mess that we continue to be mired in is just totally inaccurate. He has done some things right. He has done some things wrong. And the way in which we critique him has to be accurate. Is it accurate to say that at some critical decision points, the president may have been more accommodating than he should have been? I think that that's a fair criticism, and the answer to that is yes. But we have to then say, well, why did he do that, and what are the circumstances that he faced? And then to give a fair critique, not a blanket critique. And I think one of the reasons why the Republicans are struggling is because they want to say, oh, well, everything is, you know, we're in a 10 feet hole because Obama is 1 inch tall. And I think that just doesn't add up. And so, yeah, there's a lot that he could have done differently. And he hopefully will be able to grasp that. James Fallows in The Atlantic wrote a really good article about that a year ago in which, you know, where he made some mistakes and arguing that late in the game he's shown an ability to self-correct and that he has made a mistake. But whatever way in which we critique, it has to be an accurate critique of the president and not a caricature. And I think that the problem is that too much of it is a caricature.
Marta, quick thought before we go to the phones?
Well, I was just thinking of this great book I read earlier this year called Thinking Fast and Slow by an Israeli psychologist, this guy Daniel Kahneman. And one of the things he talks about is how we're just very irrational as human beings. But he also talks about the tendency for people to want to just categorize people into good or evil or into boxes that fit and make them feel comfortable. And human beings, just by nature, do not want to look at facts. It's much easier to kind of get a broad picture and then buttonhole someone. So I definitely agree with what Amar was saying on that. But, you know, I think there's plenty of people who look at what the president has done and have analyzed what he believes in and what he's trying to do and disagree with it. And they're not trying to make a caricature of him. They think he's fundamentally taking the country in the wrong direction.
And what's interesting is that most of those people are on the left.
Well, I'd say, well, left and right, you know.
410-319-8888. Carrie, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hi, Carrie.
I was really thinking about a comment that Margaret said earlier. And, Marta, I do agree with you about the book you just read and that people do actually see things that they want to see and not necessarily facts. But my question is that isn't that what most people do when they end up taking up for Barack Obama? Because I'm one of the people who is on the left that is disillusioned by him and think he didn't keep the promises that were made for his base. And the reason why we defend him so vigorously against the right is because we see things going on. Like, for example, when you said that Senator Ryan would be one of the people who would get us on a financially responsible track, when he was part of the Congress that held our economy hostage, when they had to vote for the debt ceiling, and everyone came toting the same party line, oh, we're not going to spend any more money. But people should know that the debt ceiling is money that's already spent. So I'm trying to understand exactly how can he be a paragon of financial responsibility.
So, oh, I didn't
we
say that.
We have 3 minutes, so let me let you jump in. I'll let Amara have a thought.
Well, right no, ahead. I think that some of the plans that Paul Ryan has laid out as far as Medicare is concerned, for example, I think are by doing block grants to the states. I think that's a very good idea. I'm sure that many people who listen to the show would disagree with me on that. But it's you have to, you know, one person isn't perfect. But if they come up with some good plans, then I'm going to take the good and not try to, you know, kill the rest of it.
I mean, I think that one of the frustrations on the left, and I'm on the left and I share them, is that when it comes to certain things in the country, sky's the limit, and there's no such thing as not enough money. The military, tax cuts are among those two categories. Financial bailouts are another one. But in a whole host of areas, the wallet gets shut, and we don't have enough money for those. And I think that what has to happen is that there has to be a larger re-engagement and a values conversation, and maybe actually that's one of the things where the president maybe didn't do enough of in his first 2 years, where it did become a technical debate, and it's the debate has to be much broader, that it's about values and what are we willing to spend our money on. And for the past 30 years, it's been totally out of whack. And if I were to critique one of the things of the president is that these are not technical debates. These are big values debates, and that's where we ought to have them.
I agree with that. I think that if the president came out with what he and told the American public what his values were, a lot of people wouldn't agree with him.
I actually don't think that that's true. I think that a lot of the values that he states are those that are in line with where the country is. The person who's having a problem articulating his values and having them resonate is Governor Romney.
Well, this has been fascinating. We can go on for days, and we will, until November the 6th. And it's great, Amara Jones, to have you on for the entire hour, not just a few minutes.
Great to be on.
I enjoyed having you with us. He's an economic justice contributor to colorlines.com. And keep on writing. Looking forward to meet you. Will you be in Baltimore for the conference?
I would bet the answer to that is yes.
Good. We'll have a chance to meet. Marta Mossberg, senior fellow at the Maryland Public Policy Institute, among many other things, who writes for The Sun and Frederick News Post as
a
columnist.
For me.
Always good to see you in the studio.
Mm-hmm.
You're not leaving, are you, Anthony?
Nope.
We're switching to local issues coming up.
Looking forward to local conversations. Some good folks in the studio.
Yes. We're going to have an interesting conversation ranging from the referendums we face to development in downtown Baltimore. Thank you both for being with us. I want to remind you on the way out the door, the support for the Mark Steiner Show comes from the Maryland State Education Association. The Maryland Dream Act makes sure kids who graduated from Maryland High School and whose parents have paid taxes for at least 3 years can pay in-state tuition. On November 6th, voters get to determine if some of our Maryland students can seek a higher education. It is important to vote, no matter which way you think. More information about ballot question 4 can be found at educatingmarylandkids.org. Anthony McCarthy and I will be right back, so don't go away.